Scotch Stories by Whiskey FM.
I am here with Tom Russell, the godfather of rock, and it is an absolute delight that you've come to speak to me today, Tom. Thank you for coming.
Nice to see you, Kate.
Tom, why don't you first explain to our listeners a bit about who you are, what you've done, what you do? Which would be, I've introduced you as the godfather of rock, so I suppose maybe that would be a good to explain where that came from.
I brought a book out 2 years ago. It's called The Godfather of Rock. It's an autobiography. And the name The Godfather of Rock came, I was working for a radio station called Rock Radio in Glasgow. And we came up with this competition idea that people would write in. It was a daily show. I did the lunchtime show 5 days a week, and people would write in with the three rock songs that they'd like me to play. Simple. And in return, they would get a T-shirt if they were selected for the day. So I was talking to the managing director at the time of the station and said, well, we're going to be doing this. And he said, oh, you'll need to have a name for the competition. I thought, well, I hadn't thought of that. And we threw one or two names backwards and forwards. And then he said, why don't you call it The Godfather of Rock? That person will be the godfather of rock for the day. And I said, that works for me. And we did it. And it was one of the most successful sort of competitions or features that we had on the radio station. Everybody would write in with their three favourites, you know, three album tracks, or sometimes singles, sometimes obscure, sometimes well known. And I would just pick out a name and I'd play the three songs and I'd make a big fuss on air that person, you know, Joe Bloggs, was godfather of rock for the day. Mm-hmm. And we'd send him a T-shirt. So that's where the name came from originally. But then people started calling me, because I've been in the rock business for a number of years and I know a little bit about it. So
just a bit, maybe, yeah.
So people started calling me the godfather of rock. The other name that I had, that nickname I had, around about the same time, the guy who did the breakfast show, Kieran Elliott, who strangely enough works for McAllen in California. Now, but at that time he was the breakfast jock in rock radio, and he was on 6 in the morning till 10. I was on from 10 till 2, so I would follow him. So I would come into the studio every morning and maybe 9:45 or something. But before that, he would say, I'm on till 10 today, and coming up after me, it'll be Tom Russell, the godfather of rock, or indeed the beard of doom.
Beard of doom.
So gradually, he started calling me the beard of doom. So when I wrote the book, the autobiography, and it was written, had gone to the publisher, and it was all ready. The publisher thought, well, I haven't got a title for it. What are we going to call it? And I said, I don't know. What do you think? And again, we were going back and forward with different names and different ideas. He says, well, do you have a nickname? And I said, not really. Well, I suppose, yeah, I suppose I've got two, the Godfather of Rock, Beard of Doom. And he said, oh, they're both fantastic. Pick one. And I said, well, how did I do that? Use Facebook. So I went onto Facebook and put up something like, I've been working for the last year writing my book. It comes out in 3 months' time. We can't decide what to call it, Beard of Doom or Godfather of Rock. What do you think? And of course, you get hundreds of people coming back with their ideas. And I think it was about 70% Godfather of Rock, yeah. 30% Beard of Doom.
I do rather love Beard of Doom.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
The Beard of Doom.
So much better in your accent, too.
Yeah.
Just thinking about your beard, how long have you had your beard
for? Oh, forever.
Tom's beard is fantastic, by the way. If you can't see it, obviously, by audio, but it is absolutely fantastic.
I grew a moustache when I was early 30s, grew a little bit, a beard like that, when I was maybe 40-ish. And then it, for the next 10 years, I would have it maybe an inch long, and then I'd shave it off. Then I would grow it again and shave it off. And I think probably when I got to 50, it was when the Beard of Doom thing, so that I let it grow and let it grow and let it grow. The best time when I was in the on holiday in the Caribbean a few years ago, and we'd gone ashore and we're walking along the beach, and there's a young local girl, she must have only been about 15, and she's sitting on a little bench on the beach, and she had a queue of maybe five or six little girls all queuing to get their hair braided and put the little coloured
cornrows and stuff. Is it things like this?
The Jamaican colours, yes, yeah. Red and green
and yellow.
Mm-hmm. So I said, "Oh, well, that's for me," and I joined the queue. And my missus just looked at me and she said, "Oh, for goodness sake, Tom, grow up." And I said, "Oh, don't worry, you can get a cup of coffee. I'm standing in the queue." So I'm standing in the queue with these five wee girls. And then it got to my turn, and she put it into three different braids.
Yeah, braiding, yeah.
With the different coloured little beads.
Oh, lovely.
I came home, and she spoke to me for 2 days. And then we came home, and when I went into the radio station, all my colleagues, they were as jealous as hell.
Yeah. Loved it, I'm sure. Very colourful.
Yeah. So I kept it for a few months as well. But as far as just to answer your first question there, as far as rock has been concerned, this coming year, 2020, I'll be celebrating my 40 years actually working on the radio, playing rock music, which is quite...
It's incredible.
It's quite thrilling, actually.
Yeah.
40 years playing rock on the radio, which is... I'll need to have a wee party, a wee 40th anniversary party.
So you work for rock radio, Clyde?
Radio Clyde.
Yeah. Rock Sport.
Real XS, Rock Sport, XFM.
Best gig?
Rock Radio.
Rock Radio. Because
it was full time. Yeah, it was about 7 years it was full time. Radio Clyde was fantastic as well. It was only one show a week on a Friday night, the Friday Rock Show. And that was right through the 80s and 90s. And two things at that time, you wouldn't obviously appreciate this, but there was no such thing as the internet. Internet hadn't been invented. There was in Scotland, certainly in the Glasgow area, if you liked popular music, in the widest sense, you had the choice of two radio stations. Radio 1 from London, mm-hmm. or Radio Clyde. That was it. You'd no capital, you'd no heart, you'd no, you know, all the rest
hundreds,
of them.
Hundreds of stations. Yeah.
Therefore, when it came to Led Zeppelin or Ozzy Osbourne or Deep Purple or Bon Jovi or Guns N' Roses or Aerosmith, etc., and Journey, all these bands, when they came to the UK, whether it be to tour or just to promote an album, it tended to be the record company people could only go to Radio 1, and Radio 1 wasn't interested in doing an interview. Ozzy who?
Really?
Before the Osbourne television series, Ozzy Osbourne was... barely known.
Not mainstream then.
No, not at all. Barely known out with the rock, the rock fans like myself. We obviously knew him. So therefore, because there were so few places to for the record companies to promote, I probably, or my show on Radio Clyde probably punched it above its weight. It was only Glasgow, but for the record company. And there was two or three other guys like myself. There was one in Manchester, there was one in Newcastle, there was one in Bristol that did the same as me on a commercial station. But there was very few outlets. So therefore, I was quite lucky and I got quite early on to interview these people and subsequently go into friendships with them and get invites to parties and things.
Did anything funny ever happen live on air?
Oh, all the time.
What was? Can you think of a particularly funny instance?
How well it'll come over on radio, I don't know. But I'll tell you that there was a chap, again in the Radio Clyde days, I could probably tell you 20 stories about funny things, but the one that just immediately springs into my head, the chap who was on before me in Radio Clyde in the very early days, was his name was Tiger Tim Stevens, very famous broadcaster in the west of Scotland, immensely popular. He was great, a smashing bloke. Oh, he was a great guy. Tim's got MS now, and it's obviously slowed down a good bit, but he was a hilarious practical joker. Now he was on 5 days a week, so he was quite relaxed with the whole thing. I was on one night a week. I was a new boy. I was extremely nervous. What used to happen was a hot seat changeover, where Tim would finish his show. He would go off out the seat. He would say, "Coming up next, it's the news, and then it's Tom Russell with the Rock Show." He would get out his chair, put the fader up for the microphone up for the newscaster who was in the room next door behind glass. Tim would get up. I would sit down. I would then take my record, put it on the turntable, and I would have 3 minutes while the news was being read to cue up the record, make sure it was cued, make sure I had my microphone right, my headphones plugged in. And when you're doing it 5 days a week, that's all nonchalant.
Second
it's all
nature.
Second nature. One night a week and you're a new boy, you're like this. You're extremely nervous. So I think it was maybe the third week that I had done the show. So I was still extremely nervous. And Tim, as always, rather than getting up right away, he was, "Hi, how you doing, Tom? What you been up to this week?" I had a record shop at the time. So what's the big seller this week? He would have a conversation. I would just want him to get out of the seat so I could get in there and cue up my record and be ready to start. But this night, the third night, he was quite slow, and then he finally got out. But I didn't have my 3 minutes any longer. I maybe had a minute and a half of the newscaster reading the news, because Tim had taken a bit of time. So I sits down in the chair, puts my record on, and I'm cueing it. And I'm not looking at anything that's going on. And I cue up the record, do all what I have to do. And then I hear in my earphones the newscaster saying, "Well, that's your news. We'll be back in an hour with an update." And that's my cue. I hit a little jingle physically with my finger.
Yeah.
That goes, "Radio Clyde News," or whatever it was. And then I open the microphone and to say, "Good evening, Tom Russell here with the Friendly Rock Show." But not looking up. So it goes in my headphones. That's the news finished, back in an hour. So I hits the jingle, opens the microphone, lifts my head up, and I was sitting there, the desk is there, the glass is there through to the newsroom, but there's a gap between the desk and the glass. Tim had got into this position without me seeing him, stood up on the chair, turned his back, and just as the newscaster said that's the news finished, he knew I was going to open the microphone. Just as I opened the microphone and lifted my head, Tim undid his belt, dropped his trousers and touched his toes. You can imagine.
It was a pretty sight.
It was not, and I'd had nightmares about that particular sight for a number of years.
What did you say?
I just burbled into a burbling wreck.
Well, that's so mean.
It wasn't mean, it was just daft. I probably did the similar things to him to get my own back.
Oh, good one. Pleased to
years
hear
later.
It.
But no, I actually thought it was my last show because I just went into a burbling wreck and put the record on, and I thought I'll get a phone call from the boss saying, "No, don't come back next week." But I didn't. I didn't. I got away with it.
Part of your job has been interviewing all sorts of interesting people, from Ozzy Osbourne to Elton John.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a standout interview? And it can be either for good or bad reasons.
Probably not got a standout interview. Mm-hmm. I could probably tell you 40 today and a different 40 tomorrow. The vast majority of them, good, professional. We were chatting earlier on about the difference between pop and rock when it came to interviews. And I didn't do many pop interviews. I did a few, but the vast majority of my experience was in rock music. And the rock scene, it's almost like a family. If the vast majority of the rock people that I've interviewed over the years, and as you say, I've been quite lucky to interview a good number of them, the vast majority of them are professional. They'll maybe have a laugh with you, but they're professional. They respect the fact that you're giving them airtime, free of charge, to promote their new single, their new album and their tour, maybe even their T-shirt. And you appreciate the fact that they've given you a bit of their time. It's
reciprocal.
Quid pro quo, yes, or whatever. Yes. So there's so many highlights. They're all in the book.
Yes. I did read about you meeting Ozzy Osbourne and that he invited you to a party once. I mean, that's fairly spectacular, isn't it, to have partied with Ozzy?
I've been twice.
Oh, have you?
Two parties in Ozzy's house and a place called a little village in Oxfordshire, Buckinghamshire,
oh,
Oxfordshire.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Just your typical little English country village, but almost every house has got the big fences round and the electric gates. Mm-hmm. The first party I got invited to there was, it was a Saturday night, and it wasn't what people imagined, wild drinking, drugs and all that. Yeah, there was a bit of drinking going on, but most of the people that were there were actually his neighbours from round about, yeah, and some record company people. But it was, it was nice. The very first time I interviewed Ozzy, and this story's in the book, I think it was probably about 1981, and as I was talking about earlier on, with there being not that many outlets for a rock act to be interviewed at that time. So I get a phone call one day and the record company yells, "Is this Tom Russell here?" "Oh, right, I'm with such and such a record company. I wonder if you can help us out. Could you do us a little favour?" I said, "Certainly, what is it?" She said, "Well, we've got this artist. He's a bit of a has-been, to be perfectly honest, but he's got an album coming out, and we've been contracted to get some interviews. And to be honest, it's hard work getting him that's interested. I wonder if you would consider doing an interview." And I said, "Well, who is it?" And you could hear her
rustling
her paper. "Oh, somebody called Ozzy Osbourne." And I said, "Well, can I just stop you there? I don't think that's any way to conduct your record company's business, calling an artist who, over the past 10 years, as the singer with Black Sabbath..." "Oh," says she, "was he the singer in Black Sabbath?" "Yes, the singer in Black Sabbath, who sold literally millions of albums, both here in the UK and worldwide. For you to call him a has-been is a bit... not very nice." Oh, she was all apologetic. So I said, "Okay, let's call a halt under that. I'm happy to do the interview." She said, "Right, okay." So Ozzy and Sharon came up in the train from London to Glasgow, and they came into Radio Clyde. The studio at that time was in the Anderson Centre.
It's
now in Clyde Bank, but at that time it was in the Anderson Centre in Glasgow. So they checked into the hotel, the one just next to the Kingston Bridge. I think it used to be a...
Is it? A Hilton?
No.
Oh, no, a Hallmark.
No, no, one in between the Hallmark and the Hilton. it was a Holiday Inn, maybe still is. That doesn't matter. They checked in there anyway. They came in to do the interview, maybe 4 or 5 in the afternoon. It was a pre-recorded interview. I was going to put it out on the Friday. So first time I'd met Ozzy, I'd seen him in concert with Black Sabbath, but first time I'd met him, we got on really well. He's a smashing guy. One of the funniest men I've ever met. I mean, if he was here, he would have us on the floor with laughter. He just tells stories. He's like Billy Connolly.
Yeah.
So we did the interview, smashing wee interview, and at the end of the interview, I think it was Sharon that said, "What are you doing now?" And I said, "Well, I'm just heading up the road. Would you like to join us for dinner?" And
that's
that'd be nice. They weren't married at that time. They were just seeing each other. I said, "That'd be smashing." So we went into the Holiday Inn, or whatever it was called, and we had dinner. And of course, certainly nobody would know Sharon, because it was long before she'd been in the telly, but nobody knew Ozzy either. The only people that would know Ozzy walking into a hotel would be rock fans. And, you know, so we sat down and we had a lovely dinner. Started off with Ozzy saying, "Do you fancy a drink?" And I said, "I'll have a pint of heavy." And that was my drink. I hadn't discovered Scotch whiskey at that time.
Yes.
Well, I had, but that's another story that we'll probably come to. And I said, "I'll have a pint of heavy, please." So I ordered heavy. And I think during the meal, I ended up maybe with 3 pints of heavy. I had the 3 pints. Sharon had a bottle of red wine, which she drank throughout the meal. Polished it off. It's not excessive, dramatically so. It's a good bucket, but it's not excessive. Ozzy ordered a bottle of 5-star Courvoisier brandy, and he drank the whole bottle during the meal.
Oh my goodness.
The whole bottle during the meal. And yes, his speech became a little bit slurred, but he wasn't legless.
Which most probably would be.
I think you and I, if we drank the bottle between us, they would have to carry us up the road.
Definitely need a taxi afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was the first time I'd met Ozzy. And I probably, as I say, had a friendship for nearly 40 years now. Mm. I haven't seen him for quite some time. Once they get to a certain level, it becomes more difficult to
keep in contact. Mm-hmm. Well, you probably have to go through people and... Mm-hmm. Which is a bit of a shame, but I suppose that's the natural...
It's just what happens.
Mm. Aside from music and living it up with celebrities, you are also rather fond of whiskey. When did you begin drinking whiskey?
My whiskey journey goes back when I was about 18, 19. I was an only child, but my mum and dad both drank whiskey, as did everyone at that time. We're talking early 60s. And everyone in my mum and dad's company all drank whiskey. Things changed over
the
years.
Women,
both
the same. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mum, dad, aunties, uncles, grandparents, everybody drank whiskey. The big difference was some would take it with water, some would take it with lemonade, not many that I can remember would take it straight. Obviously, in those days, it was blends. Bells, Haig, etc. Black and White was another popular one. White and Mackay.
Yeah.
They were all the popular ones that my parents used to drink. And I tried it, and as I've heard lots of other people say the same thing, the smell, the taste put me off a little bit. It just wasn't for me. I preferred the taste of beer. A few years later, probably in my 30s, there was a night, and it was at a gig in Newcastle, and we'd be into the 70s by this time, and the fashionable drink, my mum and dad's age group were obviously older now, and they were starting to die off. So the new crowd coming through Bacardi and Coke had started being the drink, or Pernod and lemonade, and they were starting to get a bit more adventurous with the drink. And I was at this record company do one night, and the drink was whiskey and Coke. And whiskey and Coke was dead easy. It's like Jack Daniels and Coke. It's dead easy to drink. You
just slips down, doesn't it?
Yes, and it's that particular night it slipped down a bit too easily, and I didn't see the next day at all because it was free. A record company's paying for it, and I just had far too many of them, and I wasn't well at all the next day, and possibly the day after that as well. So again, that tainted my, whiskey just doesn't agree with me. And then, in my late 50s probably, working for Rock Radio, one of our clients in Rock Radio who used to advertise with us was Tam's Drams. And that's when I first met the bold Tam. And Tam used to advertise, and we came up with this idea, let's have a whiskey tasting for listeners. So we had, I think we must have had 100 listeners came along to this tasting, which we had in Glasgow, and Tam hosted it, and he had a variety of whiskies. And as I was the host, you know, I introduced Tam, told a couple of stories, and then Tam came on and talked about whiskey. And Tam, I don't think he does it so much now. I've been to a couple of his recent tastings, but on that particular tasting, he was telling people, possibly a lot of this 100 people hadn't really been a whiskey fan. So Tam took it right back to basics about how to hold it on your mouth and let the saliva mix with it until you can actually feel the whiskey in your mouth opening up and the flavours. Whether they're to your taste or not, open up and it, rather than just taking it and swallowing down. So I did that night at that whiskey tasting night, and I suddenly, I quite like this. My memory from the whiskey and Coke night, my memory of my dad's White Mackay disappeared. And from then on, the past 10 years or so, I've increasingly enjoyed a whiskey. Nowhere near an expert. I'm obviously still learning, but I like it now. And I think one of the great things that Tam talks about is the nonsense of the whiskey snobbery. That yes. If you have a dram sitting there and you smell it and taste it, and you take a little sip and it's just a little bit too strong for your palate, don't hurt yourself, but put a wee spot of water in. Why not? If you happen to like it with lemonade, if you happen to like it with Coca-Cola, or I knew somebody that drank whiskey and fresh orange. Sounds dreadful. It tastes lovely. It's like a long, long drink with ice in it. Tastes lovely. Mm. Lovely drink.
There's no pretense with Tam. That's what I've always found. And I think that helps people to get into and understand whiskey much more. It shouldn't be an elite activity or a snobbish activity. It's just enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's a good product. Enjoy it how you want to. If you were to have a desert island dram, what would it be?
The first one that would pop into my head is my go-to whiskey that I probably started me off in my journey, which is a Glenfiddich with some ice. I find that very easy to drink. It's pleasant, it's refreshing. In recent years, I've started experimenting a little bit. This Glenfarclas 21-year-old, which you've kindly supplied today, is very, very pleasant. I enjoy a Macallan. My local club that I go to, which Tam did the charity
in Bishopton.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He did the charity whiskey tasting a few months ago, and we raised about £2,000 for a local charity. It was astonishing. They have Macallan on the £2.50.
Oh, wow.
They also do Highland Park, which I like. In my early whisky journey, 10 years ago, I had tried Laphroaig, and it just wasn't for me. I just don't like that. But again, probably Tam's to blame for this. At a couple of the whisky testings I was at a year or two back with him, he would say, well, no, we'll leave that. We've got a Laphroaig here. We'll leave a peaty one, but we'll leave that to the very end of the tasting. So you'd start with some easier to drink whiskies, and then the Laphroaig at the end. And strangely enough, I've now developed a taste for the peaty whiskies. Probably wouldn't be my first go-to whisky, apparently, but I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I like an Old Pulteney.
Yes.
From Wick. I like a lot of the Speyside whiskies.
That rich sherry.
Yes,
the sherry flavour.
Yes, yes. I quite like it's an Arran whisky. Mm. I can't remember what year. Maybe 16. I like the Glendronach. I like
it's
that one. That's a nice whisky. Mm. I like when I'm on holiday. I mentioned whisky and orange, but I was on holiday 2 or 3 years ago. It was a beach holiday, and the waiter came round. Would you like a drink? I didn't feel it. I think I'd eaten, so I was quite bagged up, so I didn't fancy a beer. And he said, what do you usually take, sir? And I said, well, I'm fond of a whisky, but it's too hot. And he says, have you tried a whisky and dry ginger? And I said, no, I haven't tried it. He said, please, will you take one in the house? And I'm not going to say no.
Yeah.
So he brought, and it was a long glass, lots and lots of ice. And he said, I didn't put a single malt in it. I put a famous grouse in it, because the single malt would be wasted. But it was filled up almost to the top. What a wonderful, refreshing drink for lying on the beach and just sipping it through a straw. That is my go-to beach drink nowadays.
It's so delicious. I rather like that with mint in it as well. So little sprigs of mint.
All right.
Just with the ginger and the whiskey and the mint. Well, it's like lying on a beach. It's just glorious. I always like lying on a beach with something delicious to drink. So not one desert island dram, lots. But I think that's the lovely thing. And I never want to ask what's your favourite dram, because it's like asking what's your favourite record. It's too...
Yes.
It's an impossible question.
I get asked it all the time. What's your favourite album, Tom? What's the best gig you've ever been to, Tom? It's impossible.
Yeah.
Impossible.
Far too much. If you were to... So you're having a drink with Ozzy Osbourne, and he'd not... had much whiskey before, what would you say and you could pick any whiskey to give him to try, what would you present him with?
I think a Glenfiddich.
Glenfiddich. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that made it very easy for me when I started. It was easy to drink. It's not going to offend or frighten or put somebody off. I think though, Ozzy, there's one of the other interviews that we're going to be playing on Whiskey FM, where the artist tells us about a night out that he had with Ozzy.
Oh, really?
And the two of them had drunk anything and everything that was going, whiskey, rum, gin, anything and everything. But when they got back to the hotel bar was shut. And... They just fancied a wee nightcap, so they opened their aftershave.
Oh no!
Drank their aftershave just to finish the night off.
Oh my goodness!
So I don't think Ozzy would have any problem with any whiskey, whether it's Laphroaig or anything.
Oh, that's so horrid! Gosh, you have to be in some state to not drink your aftershave. Well, you just sort of hope you'd have to be in some state.
Well, when you hear this guy, you'll know what we're talking about.
Tom, thank you so much for speaking to me. I'm really, really grateful. It's just been fascinating.
Pleasure, Kate.
I feel like you're a treasure trove of interesting stories, and we could have been here a lot longer, but you've got to go home, I would assume, at some point. So, thank you very much.
Thanks, Kate.